When you first hear the music on the recording Silenced Voices, you might think, oh, these are just great masterpieces that have never had the chance to be played. They deserve to be heard. Then, when you discover that some of them were written in Nazi concentration camps, the pieces take on new meaning. That's what the Black Oak Ensemble discovered. Their first recording was recently released. It's called Silenced Voices, and it features works by six 20th century Jewish composers. Five of the six composers died in those concentration camps. That's the story this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. I'm talking with cellist David Cunliffe and violist Aurelien Fort Petrozzoli. They're two of the three members from a string trio known as Black Oak Ensemble. Thank you for joining me.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So first of all, tell me, why are you called the Black Oak Ensemble?
Well, it's actually to do with a state tree. I'm married to the violinist Desiree Roustrat, and we have a black oak growing in our front yard, actually, here in Chicago. And we just like this idea of this image of a tree. We set up Black Oak as a non-for-profit group, and with the idea that we could not just be a string trio, that's the core of the group, but also branch out into having other instrumentalists join us, like a harpsichordist, say, or a bandoneon player. So it doesn't limit us, and that we can do lots of different projects involving, you know, all sorts of different kinds of music. But our first projects actually happen to be string trios, so that's kind of where we are today.
So, Aurelien, you are a permanent member of this trio then, it sounds like.
Yeah, I am. I've been with them since the start. Like David say, we perform with different musicians depending on where we perform, so guitar, harpsichord, bandoneon, and yeah, viola. You know, viola is always needed because it's the best instrument by far.
So. Debatable.
Well, of course, you add all that interesting texture in there. You are a project-based ensemble. What does that mean?
Well, I think just referring to what I was saying before, in that we love the string trio repertoire, but we also like to branch out into these other types of music. And it very often, you know, a project it revolves around a CD. And so we just sort of came up with a few ideas that we thought would be interesting to listeners. And they're all different kinds of projects. Some of them just involving string trio, some of them involving other instruments.
You're very passionate about undiscovered new works. Why is that?
Well, the string trio repertoire is not as large as a string quartet repertoire, and so you kind of have to start looking in different directions. And so one of them is to commission new works, which we've done, but also there are so many string trios that were either first works for major composers, or like in the case of Beethoven, for example, his string trios, Opus 9, were written almost studies for his string quartets. And there are so many composers who wrote string trios that are seldom played. Of course, there is a big ones, you know, like Mio and Francais and, you know, those kinds of composers. But there are many that are undiscovered. So this is a perfect medium to find this music and to champion it. So it's a case in the album that we just recently recorded, Silence Voices. But it's also the case for the albums that we are working on and different string trios that we found in the French repertoire. And so it kind of came naturally to start looking for these pieces that are not played as often.
Silenced Voices is your recording debut, and it features works from six early 20th century Jewish composers. How did you discover these works?
Well, initially, Desiree and I were on a trip a couple of years ago with the Ravinia Festival, and we were in Budapest, and we always like to make it our mission to go into music stores or bookstores and, you know, just look for random music that we might not have heard of. And we discovered all these composers, ironically, whose names began with K, that we'd never heard of, like Kuti and Krauser, Kattenberg. And we brought them home and we read them through. And we thought, wow, this is really pretty good music. These are very, very good composers. And actually not knowing anything about the context in which these composers wrote their music and how they met their demise. So that was a sort of catalyst for the whole idea. And then, Aurelien, do you want to sort of expound on that? Because that's when Aurelien's mum came into the picture.
Yeah, my mother in France is a history teacher. She's been a history teacher most of her adult life. And her specialty deals with the Holocaust. And so every year she would bring a group of students from France to Auschwitz and Krakow and Terezin in a bus. And I went on a few of those trips. And so I was very marked by this period of history. And when after we read these pieces, which were the Kuti, Krauser, and Klein, I was talking to her about it, and she was reading a book called Music at Terezin, which deals with mostly the music that was written during the time that it was a ghetto, but also the art and poetry that was made during the time at the camp, which was a make-believe camp where the Nazis tried to make it look like life was okay. And so we started talking and realized that, well, in the case of Krauser and Klein, those pieces were written in Terezin, and that Kuti also was murdered by the Nazis in Auschwitz. And slowly it became a project. At first, it was just pieces that we put on our programs when we played concerts. And it slowly became this larger scale project of finding this music. And the reason why we found so many string trios is because in some cases, those were the only instruments they had. They had one violin, one viola, one cello. And in a lot of cases of this music written during that very dark period of time, the instrumentation is always very strange because that's what they had at the time that they wrote for. And so that's how the project evolved. We got in touch with a lot of the remaining survivors or family members of the victims and found manuscripts, edited them, and that's how we got to this album.
There is a world premiere recording on this new release, Silenced Voices, and it's also by the only composer who survived World War II and the Holocaust. Let's talk about Géza Fried.
So Géza Fried is from Hungary originally, but he escaped the sort of dictatorship of his country and fled to the Netherlands in 1927. And he was another Jewish composer, and he was a child prodigy. In fact, there's a great photo of him. I think it just shows him as a little precocious boy holding a violin, and it's just extremely striking. He had pretty fantastic teachers, Béla Bartók for piano and Kadai for his composition teacher. So he was in pretty good hands there. And his music is really very, very interesting. But as you say, he miraculously survived. He came very, very close numerous times, I think, to being deported when he was in Holland. But he went on to have, a pretty good career. I think in the end, his music was sort of, became a little passé, in his own words. But he survived until quite an old age.
And he makes use of Hungarian folk music in this piece. Can you give us some examples of where we might hear that in these three movements?
Well, the last movement of the string trio is basically, it's in the title, Allegro giocoso alla Ungherese. It's it's totally a barn burner kind of a dance. It's you hear, you know, in all those pieces, you hear very much which language is spoken. In the case of Hungarian music, like the Kuti and the Fried and the Hermann, there's very strong inflection that are, you know, mirrored in their language, Hungarian language. But so the third movement is very, very inspired by folk music. And it's such an early piece, you know, it's Opus 1. So it's completely, you can hear the influences and you can hear the folk music that was probably played at that time. But it's his own voice, which is very interesting.
I'm looking at the album cover of Silenced Voices, which has basically train tracks on it. Was this inspired by one of the pieces, maybe by Hans Kratzer?
Yeah, so those tracks are the tracks that leads to Auschwitz, Treblinka. And, you know, one funny thing is that Jim Ginsberg, our producer, when we were recording the album, you know, one of the Kratzer pieces, the Tense, Tanech, starts with a very driving rhythm by the cello and a sort of a whistle on the viola. And until Jim told us about it, I never thought about it, but it is totally the noise of a train. You know, there's a rumble that a train makes when it gets into a station. And in a way, it makes sense because they would have been listening to nothing but that in a concentration camp. Trains were arriving every day. And so I think that was the idea behind the image on the cover, but also because, sadly, and again, like you said, with the exception of Fried, every single one of those composers ended up in a train that took them to their untimely death.
A couple of these composers studied at the Franz Liszt Academy, and I know that it was considered to be somewhat tragic. They lost so many amazing composers from that era who had come out of that school. And Sir George Scholte later said that Sándor Kuti could have probably been one of Hungary's greatest composers. Can you talk a little bit more about that and why George Scholte had that reaction to Kuti's music?
So George Scholte was actually a fellow student of Sándor Kuti at the Franz Liszt Academy. And he was very, very struck about how talented he was. And he tells a story of just actually how exceptionally gifted he was.
I remember reading something by the great conductor Bernard Haitink, who said that the only reason why he had a career, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, is because all the good ones were killed during the Holocaust and he was Dutch. And that is in an interview he gave a few years before retiring, so not very long ago. And it's very true, because if you look at those composers on this album, every single one of them deserved a bigger place in music history. And the fact that people like Scholte survived the Holocaust and were able to talk and explain how awestruck they were by these composers says a lot to me.
Kuti's music is, I think it's, in a way, it's one of my favorite pieces on the album. He wrote a number of these string trios we subsequently discovered. But the one we play is three very, very different movements. The first is a very sort of unpretentious, very simple opening movement, a very brief movement. Second one is even briefer and is very sort of reminiscent of Bartok, very fast, very subdued, but with sort of Bartokian rhythms all the way through. And then finally, a beautiful third movement that opens with a cello solo. and ends on this huge question mark, a sort of dominant seventh chord right at the end of the piece. So we think it's a very effective piece.
Paul Freeman was a cellist as well as a composer, and his music was not necessarily based on folk music of the region where he grew up. Could you talk a little bit about how he was a little more forward-looking in the way he composed?
So Paul Herman was a extremely talented cellist as well as a composer, and he also attended the Franz Liszt Academy at a very early age, at age of 13. And his music is a little different. The trio on our album is one of the more dark pieces, I would say, and probably the one that's a little musically different from everything else. But it's sort of becoming one of our favorites the more we play it. We sort of avoided it to begin with because it's actually extremely difficult to play. There's a lot of unison writing in it. And it's also interesting that the cello doesn't have a lot to do in the trio. The extremely hard parts are for the violin and viola, which is sort of ironic, seeing he was a cellist. You'd think he would write some sort of big virtuotic part for himself, but it's not that at all. It's him sitting back and giving all the work to the violin and violas. But we've been playing it more and more recently, and it's beginning to grow on us tremendously, and it ends in such a triumphant way, ultimately.
What's interesting for me in this whole album is how we've managed to be in touch with most of the families of these musicians. And the Herman, we met his grandson, Paul Herman, also, in the south of France where we were doing a music festival this summer. We had been in touch with him and with another one of his family members. And it was wonderful meeting him, and he's devoting his life to bringing some of his grandfather's music to light. It's very poignant to be able to do that and meet people who are actually related to those musicians.
Aurelien, do you have a piece on this recording that is really special to you that you'd like to bring to light?
I'm very partial to the Katzenberg. I think it's a very, very funny piece. It's very jazzy, very bluesy. He's also the composer, who was the most artistically minded. In the booklet with the album, you see some of his drawings. We were lucky enough to have some of his manuscripts, and there is one page at the end of a piece called Escapades that he wrote, never finished, that has a drawing of a weirdly drawn Nazi soldier giving the Nazi salad to Hitler. And it has a lot of humor in the way that he draws it and the colors. And that's reflected in his music.
When you started to play this music from these different composers, I'm curious if the historical significance of these works impacted you. I mean, could you feel it as you were playing these pieces?
Reading this music at first was just like reading some great music, you know, Berg, Schoenberg, something that had never been played but somehow was deserved to be heard. I think one of the main I wouldn't say issue, but one of the big questions for me and for the group in general is it's impossible for people to listen to this music without putting the context around it. Once I've told you in which condition this music was written, you listen to it in a different way, which I'm not sure is a disservice or a service to the music, because I think and I'm biased, of course, but I think that this music stands on its own. I think it's amazing music written by extremely brilliant minds that were cut short and could have been something much bigger. But like I said, it's very difficult for the audience, and that's something I speak about during concerts. It's very difficult for the audience to listen to this music and not think about the context. And for us playing it, it's also very difficult, because when you know that someone like Crassa was writing his Passacaglia in fugue in Terezin, and you know in which conditions they were, and yet they were able to create, it's impossible not to have emotional response to that. But you know, we try to stay as sober and as sincere as possible in the way that we play these works, and hope that the audience can look at it in both ways, both as a historical milestone and also as great music.
Thank you to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks featuring Black Oak Ensemble. The recording is called Silenced Voices. If this is a podcast you rely on, the absolute best thing you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Mocker.